With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Woven Energy Podcast with me, Joseph Sakora, and Damon Smith. It's good to be back. This is where we talk about shamanism from the ground up. And in this episode, we're going to be looking back at chelicity, specifically what Damon has called physical chelicity and how we can apply that specifically to what we've been looking at recently, which is stage three of learning shamanism. But first of all, I think we have a few things to cover. So Damon, I understand you've actually been away out of the country and done a shamanic retreat. Is that right?
Well, we did sort of a mixture retreat. I don't know if you call it a retreat. We did a long weekend. And we did a long weekend. It was definitely shamanism related. We definitely did some spirit dance. We basically did a weekend on the 8 trigrams.
Yeah.
And we did a bunch of different things. We did some spirit dance. We did some what people would call martial arts. We did, various stuff to try and give people an idea of how the 8 trigrams work, the energy changes work. And yeah, it was in Austria, in Graz. It was definitely Woven Energy sort of branded. We're going to do another one in Austria a little bit later in the year, not a lot later in the year. And so that one will be proper 100% spirit dance.
So this one retreat was more like testing the waters.
It was a bunch of different things for people to have a go at. It was very, very Torshiel Teen, that's probably the best way to put it. We did all kinds of stuff and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and we had some great feedback from some of the people who ran the course as well, in terms of, I think I wasn't the only one who enjoyed it, but I had a thoroughly great time. Partly because Austria is just an amazing country. Tamo was a guy who organized it, one of our now fairly long-standing patrons, and we went up in the woods and did lots of other things outside of the seminar, and just a fantastic time all around. And like I say, we're going to do another one, I think, in April. There'll be details about it on the Patreon page.
Speaking of which, on this podcast, we'll keep people up to date on this.
Yeah, absolutely, this podcast, absolutely. But speaking of which, I can't remember. It's quite a while since we had an episode out, but I can't remember exactly how far we have to go back and start thanking people for being members of our wonderful tribe patrons. We have thanked quite a few of you on the Heretics podcast, but we try to thank everybody on both podcasts. So if it's all right with Joe, I'll do a quick whip through of our patrons. I'm going to start from September, although I think we released one in October last year, Woven Energy episode. I'm going to start from September and work forwards. And if I miss you out, it's not deliberate. We did read everybody out on a recent Heretics episode, so hopefully that'll be okay. So going back to the start of September, we got Sandra Rebecca, Rachel Jones-Derris, Chris Kelly, David Horswell, David Nietfield, Dan Ristow, Michal Virant, who was the guys on the seminar. Cool guy, very nice guy that I hadn't met before. So thanks, Michal. Michal actually made a big difference on the seminar as well. John Kavanagh, Ilko, longstanding patron, put his amount up. Thanks, Ilko, you're a starter. Ethan Murchie, David, Jonathan Young, Melanie Popiolek, thanks ever so much, Melanie, it's greatly appreciated. Wow. And our latest one, Pamela Agin, thanks, Pamela. So
I think part of this, part of me is thinking, Wow, I hope more people don't sign up because we'll be here all day. I think part of this is just you in utter shock that people are actually supporting us on Patreon.
Maybe. I mean, it is fantastic. I've said it many times before. It makes a lot of difference. It's made a huge difference to me in terms of like just being able to keep doing this thing. I mean, both the podcasts. My work has been all-consuming, really, in recent times. And I want to get more stuff out this year than we got out last year. That's definitely my intention. And I am on my not-so-new work. I've been working in Cambridge now for, I think it's 5 months now, so it's just I'm not that new anymore. I feel I'm getting on top of it a little bit. So hopefully we'll be able to do that, get some more stuff out this year. I did put up some pictures, just bridging into the subject of today's podcast. I did put some pictures up on Patreon as a sort of teaser for this episode. And they are pictures of a Japanese group who do a form of spirit dance. The reason I did that is that I didn't really want to give the impression that we're talking exclusively about Mongolian spirit dance on this episode. We're going to be introducing a bunch of new terminology, and it's all going to be in Mongol. So just to explain why that is, there are some concepts that I want to talk about and reuse ideas I want to introduce some words for things that I want to then continue to talk about as we record more podcasts in the future, as we delve more deeply into spirit dance.
Yeah.
And the words I'm going to introduce are in Mongol, but I didn't want to give the impression that we're only talking about Mongolian spirit dance. So what I did was I put some pictures of a fairly awesome form of Japanese spirit dance. Very old photos, dating back to 1950s. Mm. The photos are not really dated, but they're all black and white, and based on the people in them, you're looking at that kind of time period, late 1940s, 1950s, into the 1960s. This is a spirit dance that was taught by a lady called Kitamura Sayo, as long-standing listeners to the podcast probably aware. A lot of shamans are female. A surprisingly large proportion of shamans are female, even in fairly male-dominated societies, which is quite interesting. This has certainly been true in Japan for a very long time. And Kitamura Sayo was quite a prominent shamaness who, like me, specialized in spirit dance. And which she called Muga no Mai, which is basically the dance of emptiness, which I think is a really cool, really cool way of describing spirit dance. And that idea of emptiness comes from this idea. If you recall, we had a conversation sometime about what's the difference between spirit dance and ordinary dance. Do you remember that?
I do.
And one of the things we said, one of the differences between spirit dance and ordinary, I think I gave ballroom dancing as the exact opposite of what spirit dance is. Is where it comes from. It comes from that setel. When you're doing spirit dance, you're not deciding what you're doing. The underlying spirit is deciding that. And so one of the ways is, I think we said, you can detect fake spirit dance, especially if there's multiple shamans involved, multiple people doing the dances. They're all doing the same thing. You're pretty sure that that's, not. So
it's become ritualized. Before we move on, let me just wind up a very, very tiny bit. Back to Patreon very, very briefly. What can people expect if they do support us on Patreon very quickly, and then we'll get on with the podcast. So it's if you do want to supporters on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/woven-energy, is it? Or is it just Woven Energy?
It's just Woven Energy. There's no dash.
Excellent. So patreon.com/woven-energy. And what can people expect if they support us over there?
Sure. So, well, they can expect to get thanked. That's what we...
They can be put on the spot and publicised.
That seems to be what we do. A lot of the aspirations we have for things that the patrons can expect some of them are still somewhat down the road, particularly the Grove, which is our big development that's ongoing. That hasn't been going. That's one of my New Year's resolutions, is to get the Grove cracking again. I mean, there is something there. It's grove.wovenng.com.
This will have videos and all sorts of extra resources, won't it?
Yeah. We're audio podcasts. Obviously, videos are pretty useful. I may do the Woven Energy seminars that we run, starting with the one in April. I think it's April. It could be May. I'm going to video some of that and stick that up. So down the line, there will be some advantages from the Grove coming down the line for people. But just in terms of what's there now, there are different levels. Everybody gets thanked. You can be a patron for $1 a month. Some people support us at that level. That's fantastic, you know. It's amazing. To me, it's more like people showing us support, you know. But in terms of being able to justify continuing to do this stuff when there are other pressures, certainly on our respective families and this type of stuff, it's certainly been helpful to show that we have this support behind us.
There's people out there listening and taking action.
Exactly. For on Patreon itself, and it should all be on the Grove as well, but it's not all in the Grove yet. There's a bunch of additional content, like the thing I referred to. For some of the earlier episodes, before I started this new job, I got some fairly, good episode notes for different episodes that came out. I do intend to pick that up again. But there are also just like, you know, whenever we bring a new episode out, I tend to stick up a post on Patreon about it. Yeah. And then people are able to comment on that. And the vast majority of that stuff is available to people from the sort of $5 a month level. In terms of just accessing the content, there's some of it that's only available for $7 a month, a little bit that's only available for $7 a month people. And then we have our kind of power patrons at $15 a month who we had a private discussion group on the old platform for the group. That's been revamped, but we're getting the new discussion group on the Grove, so those guys get access to that.
Private discussion,
And then we have a number of founder patrons. For a long time, we only had one, who's wonderful. He's a founder patron who doesn't want us to tell us their name. But we now have more than one founder patron. They're $40 a month. That's amazing. And basically, that patron level was intended for people who really wanted to get involved and help out and work with us to get some of these episodes out. It's just fantastic that people are sort of willing to support us at that kind of level. Unbelievable, really. And so, you know, it's all, as far as I'm concerned, the whole lot's wonderful. It just, like I said, I've said many times, I'd be happy with that number of listeners at one point in time, let alone patrons, you know. And so another thing is, we did hit our 25 patron target, so we have promised to put out a patrons only episode. When we do put out a patrons only episode, that is available at all levels. I make that available at all levels, including the $1 a month level. It's just so the additional content stuff is for kind of the high levels and that. Yeah, and we just to note that behind the scenes, We have patrons who have got quite heavily involved in what we're doing.
It's a way of bringing the community a bit closer together, getting a bit more contact going rather than us sat here just
it's
yelling at you all.
To be honest.
Excellent.
And there will be more of that in future. I mean, the real constraint on that is my time and your time. Mm. That's been the big constraint on it. And like I say, I've made a New Year's resolution to spend more time on that this year.
Yes, and I will do the same. Okay, excellent. So let's get cracking with the episode. So we were on with Chillicity. You were talking about Chillicity and the physical side of Chillicity and where the spirit dance comes from. The Satel, I believe you left it on. And I do think if people want a quick catch-up episode, it would be episode 7, 8, and 9 as the very first port of call, wouldn't it? The ones with on the basics of what Chillicity actually is from a shamanic
perspective. Yeah, that's right. I mean, we went into it in a fairly old amount of detail on it. But what we didn't really do was break it down in terms of... one of the things we said was, as you move, we've talked about these seven stages, and we've sort of got through into stage three now, which we've referred to as a spirit dance. But like the spirit dance is like an example of stage three, example of what happens at stage three. And the stage three is very much like a legwork, putting in the legwork, putting in the graft, putting in the hours kind of stage, and on your technique, basically. And we've sort of explained Chillicity in terms of its components, what actually it's made up of. And what we've said is every time you get into a new level of shamanism, of shamanic practice, a new level of technique, that's a bit beyond our last one, you pick up a bunch of new stuff, but then you return to Chillicity. Yeah. But Chillicity can also be understood, or incidentally, also if you want to catch up or get up to speed on... I'm just getting the list of episodes up. On the level we're at, I did do a thing called a... what did I call it? A monologue, review. Yeah, which was a bit of a review on Hook Arug, which is basically the bag of basics for spirit dance, or a bag of basics for spirit dance. So I did a monologue on that. But what I mean by physical Chillicity, well, we've said there's three components of Chillicity, but there's also sort of three levels of understanding of Chillicity, and these two things are not they're not really the same thing. These are just like when you're practicing your shamanic technique, that lightweight observation of self that we talked about in all the Amskar episodes, that ability to observe yourself internally and in your context to a certain extent without affecting yourself. So remember we said things to observe your breathing without affecting your breathing, to be able to observe your heart rate without affecting your heart rate, and that would extend to, in terms of spirit dance, that would extend to observing your skeleton, your skeletal alignment, the ligaments, the bones, the muscles, the circulatory system, nervous system, all that kind of stuff, to being able to observe all of that in a very lightweight way. So to the extent that you don't affect anything natural that is going on there. And this is the skill of Amskar. It's a skill that's very, very important when you come into spirit dance, because if you haven't got that skill, it's not going to be spirit dance. It's going to be ordinary dance. Does that make some kind of sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So when I say that Chillicity can also be broken down into three other things that aren't sort of Bat, Toshaltin, and Gukuk, these three other things are more like modes of that observation. Things that have the attention of Bat, things that get hold of the attention of Bat, or the Burchi Kertarate, that unfocused, sharp attention. Mm. Where does it lie when you're practicing your shamanic technique? There's sort of three levels of where that can be. And they have names as well. I do apologize for all the Mongol words. But we've got Tongluk, we've got Ayug, and we've got one of the worst, most difficult names to pronounce, words to pronounce in Mongol, Yaslachgui.
Excuse you, Demon.
I do apologize, but it's that kind of language. But the pictures of the Japanese spirit dance that are up there from Kitamura, they are and her a group of people. They are there to remind. We could use any of these Mongol words, any of them, to talk about the stuff those guys do. Yeah, and they would still apply, and they would be, you know, perfectly relevant, even though the Mongol words are not Japanese words. The reason we don't use English words is there tend not to be any for the things we're trying to talk about. That's the big issue. And so that up to this point, through the episodes on Chalisti and the episodes on Amska, we've mostly been talking about that kind of tonglug. That's that whole thing about not thinking. Tonglug. Being empty. Yeah. Not thinking. You know, it's all my transliteration. It's written in this beautiful, if you were to write down in Mongol, it's this beautiful cursive script. But in my Damon's, you know, write it like you say it, Mongolian romanization, it'd be something like T-O-N-G-L-U-G, tonglug. Okay. That's what we've talked about to date, mostly when we've been talking about Chalisti. Now we're going to move on to the next level, and that's what this episode's setting the scene for, is the next level, which is Ayug. This is more like when you are doing your spirit dance, you are effectively, you're vessel-like, not just in a spiritual form, not just in that, you know, empty your mind kind of, you know, basic Chalisti training kind of form. You also need to be physically empty. And what I mean by that is you need your movements need to maintain a kind of Chalisti, a kind of Ayug. What it is your alignment of your body while you're moving through your, you know, what is effectively, it's not random, but it appears to be random. Your random spirit dance arising out of the satel. It has your mind is empty, but your body also has a vessel-like quality. And so this is the next thing. The next thing that is a differentiator between normal dance and spirit dance, you can see some people who are phenomenally good normal dancers. I have a few good friends because I, you know, hung around with some people in the dance community, the normal dance community. They're phenomenal. One of their great skills a lot of them have is called isolation. They isolate parts of their body, and they're able to move parts of their body in isolation, and they use it in these different ways. And it looks super cool. If they're good at it, it looks super cool, but it ain't spirit dance, because in doing that, that they're doing the exact opposite of what you want to do in spirit dance, which is embody a unity and keep that vessel-like quality on. And so what I'm saying is really, You can see some dancers, and you say, that person's an amazing dancer, but they're not doing spirit dance at all. They dance from a spirit dance point of view. If you're looking at it through the eyes of a shaman, you would say that's bad if they were claiming it was spirit dance. And you do see this. You see people doing ordinary dance and putting on some sort of shaman robes and and they're good dancers, but they're bad shamans. that's a thing. And you can tell it immediately from the lack of physical Chalisti in the movements that they're making. The movements may be elegant. The movements may be very elegant. They may look amazing. They may be very gymnastic or athletic or elegant or graceful, but there's no Chalisti.
If you look at a system like a dance, or you look at a system, say, like a martial art, there's certain body mechanics which you stick to within that specific system.
That's not what I'm talking about, though.
That's the opposite of what you're talking about. But is when you're talking about moving from a Chalisti point of view, is everything moving together? In which case, it has its own system in itself, or
It's holistic. So spirit dance is holistic. The whole body, the mind and the spirit and the body, as you might imagine, are completely unified. Incidentally, the third level out of this three stage, Tongluk, Ayug, and Yathlakhui. My Mongol pronunciation is not what it used to be. That's the spirit level. Yeah, so you have chalicity and spirit as well. But here we're talking about the chalicity of the body. And so when you're performing your spirit dance, when you're doing your spirit dance, there is a chalicity in the physicality of the dance. And it's you can see it. And one of the ways you work on it when you're doing spirit dance, and the key point is, it doesn't matter what kind of spirit dance you're doing, you can start working on your ayug. You can start working on your physical chalicity, because there are, like all things in shamanism, there are a whole host of different techniques you can do to start developing your ayug. And also, like in shamanism, the techniques are examples. There's lots of different ones. But you've got to be careful, because when I say there's a bunch of techniques for working on ayug, what I mean is those techniques are not dance movements, yeah? Mm-hmm. They are techniques that you can work on in any dance movement, yeah? Mm. So this is the point. This is a way of making your... I'm sat here doing all these movements now. Nobody can see anything. We need the group. But basically, you can work on any of these techniques in any dance movement. So, for instance,
the purpose of those techniques is to teach you the body mechanics of this physical chalicity.
It's not body mechanics. It's not body mechanics. It's physical chalicity.
But we've got to learn how to connect everything together.
Exactly. But the point is, you can learn how to connect anything together with any body mechanics.
Okay.
That's the point, yeah. And so what you do is you take, like, it's like looking at the world through a filter, or looking at that lightweight observation of self, the eyes of the eagle, the bird shikhat arate, that you practice in your basic chalicity training, that you practice in your amskar training, to be able to observe yourself holistically without affecting what you're doing. When you move into level three, you want to start to be able to observe yourself with a different unfocused focus, a different expansive focus. And those different expansive, foci? I don't know. Those different flavors of Bord Shikhat Harate.
Yeah.
I want to give some Mongol names to them and start explaining what they mean. So that these are just examples. There's endless techniques like this that you can do. But my point is, you don't do them all at once. What you do is, when you're practicing your spirit dance using the kind of techniques we've talked about already, and more techniques we'll talk about in future, no matter what the physical techniques are that you're doing with your spirit dance, whether you're doing the same spirit dance that these guys from the Kitamura people, the Kitamura lineage, have done and do, if you're doing that, which is beautiful spirit dance, I could do any one of these techniques on that particular flavor of spirit dance. I could do any one of these techniques on Mongolian spirit dance. I could do any one of these techniques on another type of spirit dance, something like Teodori or something like that from Japan, Kagura. I could do them from, South American spirit dance. It doesn't matter. I can take one of these techniques and I can apply it to any of those weird and wonderful flavors of spirit dance from anywhere all over the world. The Ainu people's spirit crane dance, yeah, you could apply it to that as well. Yeah, and these techniques basically allow you to start to develop physical chalicity, not just kind of mind-based chalicity, clearing the baseline.
So would body unification, from a physical point of view, be the wrong way to think about it?
No. In spirit dance, the body must be unified. So the way to think about it is, if you practice these techniques, your body will become unified. That's probably the best way to put it. That will happen. Mm. What you shouldn't try to do is practice all these techniques simultaneously. It's when you're doing your spirit dance, you would choose one of these techniques to unfocus on, rather than focus on. One of these techniques to batshure, how to say, on, yeah. You pick one of these to focus on, and then on a different occasion when you're doing your spirit dance, you might focus on another one. On a different occasion, you might focus on another one. You don't try to do them all together. What happens when you do that is you pick up, this is gukuk, you know, bat toshaltin and gukuk. You pick up the gukuk of that particular technique when you practice that technique. And then when you do the same spirit dance, but with a different focus, with a different technique, then you pick up a different kind of gukuk from that. And all of those gukuks add up to something that approximates or that approaches physical chelesti. That's the idea. So probably best to start giving some examples.
Exactly. I think I'll get a clearer idea once I hear.
Yeah, yeah. So we have already talked about one of these, which is Ashgui, yeah? Mm-hmm. Which is this idea of, and incidentally, if you're Patreon, there is a video in there somewhere of me showing a bit of Ashgui, kind of informal video. Ashgui is this kind of heaviness of the idea of the shaman's flesh hanging on their bones, almost like the shaman becomes a skeleton. And the flesh just hangs there. In the same way that, you know, if you see Mongolian shamans in all their regalia, they have all kinds of stuff hung off their body, basically. Mm. And people talk about it, the shaman's garments or the shaman's robes or whatever you want to call it. But actually, it's just a whole bunch of stuff that hung off themselves. Well, one of the things that hang off themselves is their muscles and sinews and tendons. And it develop a sense of heaviness. And we will go into each one of these in detail in future episodes. I just wanted to set the scene in this episode. So Ashgui is one of these Ayug techniques. Mm. So another one would be Numlach. So one day you might be doing your spirit dance, doing the stuff that things like Tillin and other things that we've done. And on that day, you'll work on Ashgui. Just remember that when I say work on, I don't mean mess up your basic chelisti. Yeah, we're talking about the Burjikertharate. We're talking about the lightweight observation of self through bat that you develop through your Amska practice. So if you're finding this kind of thing difficult, if you can't attempt these techniques like Ashgui without thinking about stuff, a lot, or doing too much thinking, then don't do them. Just go back and practice the Amskar exercises, or go back and practice the chelisti exercises more. It's like that. Yeah. So another one would be Numlach.
Numlach.
Yeah, Numlach is this is like a bow, like archery kind of bow. The Mongolian bow is very, very sophisticated for when it was used by Genghis Khan and his armies. The Mongolian bow was a super high-tech bit of equipment. It's laminated, it's made of layers of sinew and wood and bone, various things, but it's basically a laminated bow. And when it's not strung, it's curved over in a C-shape. And then when you string it, you open up that C-shape and you bend it back on itself and string it like that. And it produces a very, very high draw strength on the bow. But the question is, what does the bow brace itself against?
What's it called? What's the bow called?
The bow is actually in the word numlach. So that num bit at the start, that's the bow.
Cool.
And the key point is that it refers in particular, the lach ending is kind of just turning the word bow into a verb, which is just to talk about this thing that Mongol does that is quite unusual as a language in terms of our kind of language. It's a sense of being like a bow. It's of storing energy in your body like a bow. And the key point in terms of that holisticness, that unity aspect that you were talking about, what does the bow brace itself against? This is the key point with Numlach. What is your holistic structure at every given point in your feet? So if you're doing spirit dance for 15 minutes, every single second during that 15-minute period, Numlach is on. your body is braced against itself in every way. Every part of your body is braced against every other part of the body. It's storing energy continuously in the exact same way that a bow stores energy. So does that make sense,
mate? It does. Yeah? I'm just trying it now. It's a bit like when you compress inwards, but the whole body compresses inwards.
Yeah. So the bow stores energy under compression, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But it's not simply compressing everything in into the center of the body. It's more like the character of the torso, the limbs, the head, the neck, the feet, the hands, the fingers, toes, the character of all of those things throughout the entirety of a spirit dance, although they're all continuously moving and they're moving in ways that are unified together, they are all constantly storing energy within their own structure. That's the point. Brilliant. And this is the energy that the vessel that you're creating, the vessel-like structure that you're creating with your ayuk, with your physical chalisti, this is the energy, some of the energy that's being stored and contained within that. But of course, that energy is not just sitting there. It's not like a battery. It's not just sitting there. It's in constant movement, constant flux, constant change. But despite the constant movement, the constant flux and the constant change, it is continually contained in the way that a bow contains energy. And when the Mongol bow is strung, it's under tension at all times. And this is the point with Numluk. I don't mean like a physical tension. The part of the bow that stores energy through compression is under compression at all times.
Yeah.
And the part of the bow that you know, it's like the front and the back of the bow, isn't it? The back's under compression, the front's under, it's kind of stretched.
Yeah.
Both parts are storing energy at all times. And so this is the idea of Numluk. And so there's kind of the first two. Ashgri, which is a kind of hanging on the bones.
In a practical way, yeah, if you were practicing a basic movement from the spirit dance,
yes,
how would you apply Numluk to a very simple...
Well, you don't apply it. What you do is observe yourself with your lightweight observation of self that you've developed through your AMSCA practice, mm-hmm, and you see if it's there. And if it's not there, then you need to get it there somehow. One of the things that you would observe is that you observe a springiness in your body. There's a springiness. If you move one way, there's a springiness that tends to want to go the other way. Mm. Any part of you, your foot, your hand, your neck, your head, anything, there's a kind of springiness inside your body. And this is what Numluk's about. It's something that if you practice it, you'll find it's easier to understand what I'm talking about than if we just sort of sit and think about it in your head, because this is physical understanding stuff. It's one of those things, Numluk's probably one of those things where you think, oh, that sounds like it's going to be difficult. And actually, when you start practicing, you're going to find it's not quite as hard as you thought it was going to be. But we can definitely give some, in the Grove and stuff, and obviously in the seminars, we can give some demonstrations of these different principles like Numluk.
Yeah.
But generally, what you want to be is exactly like a bow. And you might be sat thinking, how do I, like a bow that's strung, like a bow that's under tension, even if it was just a Western bow, like a long bow or something like that, it's still under, one side's under compression, the other side's under stretch. I'm not using it as an analogy. Yeah, that's probably the best way to put it. I'm not saying pretend to be like a bow, appear to be like a bow, or really be like a bow. Mm-hmm. And what you find is when you get deep into your spirit dance, there's a lot of power in there. I think we've mentioned this before. It kind of grows, there's a quickening. There's something that, you know, builds inside it. Mm. And the Numluk is what's storing all of that power.
Mm.
And it can be immense power. I mean, if someone was to get in your way while you're doing spirit dance, sometimes if you're right deep in it, that could lead to injury, you know.
Yeah.
There's a huge amount of power in it. So this is why you need a grove with nobody in it but you, and you're taking anybody out. But of course, you know, if you've got your chalisti on properly, you're not going to run into anybody, because on a certain level, you know, they're there, you know. Mm. But it's that kind of thing, you know, to the point where you know you could knock something, you know, just, and it's not that you would set out to do that, but just with the momentum of your spirit dance, you could knock over something fairly heavy. Not setting out to do that. Just, I mean, if somebody suddenly, something appeared that was fairly heavy.
Well, not that it is this, but to draw some sort of a comparison, yeah. if you throw a punch without any experience, you're just not going to hurt anything. But if you throw a punch with some experience, like full body weight, everything moves together as one and it ends
up... So I'm not sure that that's a good example because it's nothing to do with pulling punches. But another way to put it is if you got in the way of a shaman who was deep in their spirit dance and they weren't throwing a punch, you would probably feel like you had been punched. That's probably the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a better way to put it, yeah.
Got you.
Or that you'd been hit by something heavy like a truck. It's because the Asqui as well is this kind of thing. But you've got to remember, this is not the purpose of it, right? This is just trying to describe what the experience of it is like. Mm. Yeah, mm. It's very very it's a very very powerful thing, but the movements are not in any way to do with fighting or aggressive or anything like that. Nothing to do with that. It's just dance. It's spirit dance movement. It's not any kind of fighting movement or attacking movement or anything like that. It just means that as you're moving around in this, you know, with Asqui on, this heaviness on, and the body storing energy like that, there's just a huge amount of energy in there. And anytime you get a huge amount of energy, if something gets in the way of that, it's usually not that good for the something. That's probably the best way to put it. Yeah. So we're definitely not talking about throwing punches or anything here. Yeah, that's for the other podcast, mate.
My point was about the experience, though, not the throwing the punch. It was about you don't know what you're doing, but then when you're completely locked, not even locked. You see, you wrap yourself up with language, don't you, with this stuff?
Tell me about it. This is why trying to do it in English is a nightmare, mate.
When your entire body flows and moves together as one, you move in a certain way, was what my point was. So the punch is irrelevant, but the experience of not moving together versus moving together as one.
Yeah, exactly. But that, you know, there's no punching in spirit dance. There's usually nothing like that in spirit dance for a very good reason. That would be an example of Tairak, yeah?
Yeah.
And we try our best not to overuse Tairak because of the propensity to overuse Tairak in spirit dance.
The Tairak being cutting.
Yeah. It's not that you can't use Tairak in spirit dance, but it's just like that people have a natural tendency, especially settled, civilized people like us, we have a natural tendency to go mad on Tairak when we start doing our spirit dance. So
I think that's because it's what happens naturally if you get...
I'm not sure about that. It did for me.
I don't know why, but maybe that's just me.
I strongly suspect that the miasma may have something to do with that. You know, I'm not just saying you, I mean all of us, myself included. Mm. The miasma may have something to do with that. And you know, cultures that have no miasma, i.e. pure hunter-gatherer cultures, there's so few of them left in the world that it's hard to say anything statistical about them, isn't it? You know, because what would we be like if we were brought up in a pure hunter-gatherer culture that had no contact with civilization or exotericism at all? Would we then be obsessing over Tairak and our spirit dance? I don't know one way or the other, but I suspect not. That's probably the best way to put it. Mm. So
those are two techniques.
So I'm not finished though, mate. There's more. And so the next one, Bochi. Which is another hard to pronounce one. I'm not sure it's as hard as some of the other things we've done, but it's not the great, is it? Bochi. This is... I'm not going to try to pronounce it or translate it into English. I'd rather just describe the effect. Do you know, if you put bangles on your arms or even on your legs... Some dancers do. They sort of fly around and they make it quite a nice... You know what I mean by bangles? Just lightweight hoops of metal. And you might actually find shamans doing this kind of thing. You get another, as you get experience with spirit dance, you start to understand why shamans hang all that stuff off themselves.
And possibly why it lingers in some cultures. I know in India they do that quite a lot.
Indian dance. The bangles should be loose. I don't actually do it with bangles. I mean, I guess I could. I mean, that might be worth getting some bangles and having a go at that sometime. But it's just like the feeling that you have bangles. When you're moving, you have bangles, a bunch of them hanging on your arms and possibly on your legs. And it's just like the bangles are very loose. And as you move around with your arms and legs, those bangles are moving about in a way that's, even though they're loose, they're moving around in a way that's conducive to the rest of what you're doing. The looseness of them doesn't prevent them becoming part of that energy weave. It doesn't prevent them becoming part of the dancing and being integrated with you.
Mm.
And so Bhakti is basically moving like you've got bangles on your limbs. That's the best way I can describe it. And very often when you have bangles, when you put bangles on your arms or anything over your arm, really, you know, shamans hang all kinds of stuff off themselves. But imagine, just say, putting a towel over your arm or something like that. When you're moving around with these things, it reduces the tendency. Or even another way to put it is a watch, yeah? If you put a watch on and you really loosen up the band, it makes you, tends to stop you wanting to fling your arms out flat.
Yeah, because
in straight lines.
It'll fly off, won't it?
It'll fly off, exactly. So you and that's something you never really want to do in spirit dances. It's like go flat.
So you move as if the bangles are part of you, part of your arm.
Exactly. That's what Bhakti is about. You move as if the bangles are loose, and your arms and legs are containing the bangles in a way that they wouldn't go flying off if you really were wearing bangles. And now that I've thought about it, I'm going to go get me some bangles. Just like, because I've always done this without, really, you know, or when I've done it with some sort of shamanic clothing, I use the sleeves or whatever of the clothing is in the same sort of way.
Yeah.
I've definitely done it with a loose watch. But do you know what I mean? But it's a general feeling.
I know exactly
of
what you mean. I remember doing this bangles as a kid. Yeah. I remember just purely playing around with this as a kid. You wrap a towel, and it just brought it back when you mentioned the towel. You put a towel around your arm and you move your arm around, trying to keep the towel on your arm. And it's more difficult than you think, but it's quite a good feeling when it stays on and
so
you move it around and do whatever you want with it.
Exactly. That's Bhakti. Yeah. And that tends to make your body form circularly. Because if your body forms circularly, that means there's nowhere for them to fly off to, yeah? Because the movement and energy that's been transmitted through the weave, through the guruk, is always contained. It's always circular, yeah? And so that means there is nowhere for them to ping off to. This is Bhakti. It's like having bangles on your arms, the best way I can describe it. And again, just to reiterate, so that's Ashkwi, Numlach, Bhakti. Just to reiterate, you do not work on all three at the same time. You pick one, you work on that, then stop working on that. Hopefully some of the guruk from that has come into you. You pick another one, you work on that for a while. Some of the guruk from that comes into you, you pick another one. But do not try to do these things, to work on these things simultaneously. They are there simultaneously, but you only ever work on one. Because if you try to work on two or three simultaneously, you won't get the chalicity on it. It won't merge back into chalicity. So that's my recommendation when you do your spirit dance. Just one spirit dance session, just do one of them. Yeah. Mm. And then on a different occasion, do a different one or the same one again. But don't mix them up in one session. That's probably the best way to put it. Okay, so we're cracking on now. Moruch is the next one. Moruch, you can see, I mean, if you do look at, okay, so we're going to have to put some pictures on Patreon for this particular episode. So we've got the bowl that needs to go up. I don't know that I need to put some pictures of some bangles. I don't know if anybody doesn't know what a bangle looks like. They probably do. If you do a search on Amazon or something, you probably find a bangle.
Yeah. You just got to make sure it's loose. So it does have the potential to fly off if you wanted to use a bangle.
So Muruch, if you look at a lot of, especially Mongolian shamans' costumes, you will see that there's all sorts of stuff hanging off them. Those things are not light. I mean, they fly around. You know, when they're doing the spirit dances, fire land very circularly, as you'll see. I think on the the teaser for the Grove, there's a Mongolian shaman spinning around on there and all his costumes flying out in all directions. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
And that's very common in Mongolia, that kind of thing, and in other countries as well. For instance, the Japanese spirit dance I was talking about, you see the circular. If you look at their stuff, for sure, if you look at their stuff, you will, even in the static photos that are on there, they're all black and white, but you'll see that they've got the bangly thing going on, right? Even though there are no bangles, you can see what I mean immediately about the Borki and their movement. Moruch is the, it's like being under a covering, and especially, it's your whole body, but especially your shoulders. If you imagine being like in a tent, like a teepee, which is a bit what those costumes look like, and you imagine all that weight hanging down across your shoulders, or like on top of your shoulders, and then pressing them down in a circular way so that your shoulders are forever, they're free to move, but they've always got this weight of covering on them. It's not really there, but it's they're behaving like it is.
Yeah.
And again, that tends to round the shoulders, it tends to hollow the chest, it tends to bring the elbows around closer than they would normally be in any given position. And again, this all adds to the containment. And also when you start stepping across the way, it feels like you're sliding under, you know, like you're under a tent, but the tent pole's been taken down and you're underneath. And like there's this big heavy canvas tent on top of you. Mm. And you're free to move around underneath it. But when you move, it sort of slides over the top of you. You know what I mean? Mm. All of this kind of thing is Borki. And it's, again, it's all an aspect of developing this physical chelesti, the aug, in your technique. And then the final one that I wanted to, there's five that I wanted to pick up, basically five basic ones that I wanted to pick up, is Ben Taglach, which is the idea that... When I don't know if you've seen in some religious groups, they if they've got a holy book, no matter what it is, you know, Fudasaki or something or whatever, or a Bible or the Quran or whatever it is, they sometimes sort of reverently put a cloth over the top of it while it's not being used. And have you seen that kind of thing?
Yeah.
They do it in a reverential way. They're not trying to hide it or anything. It's like looking after it kind of thing. Maybe make sure it doesn't get dust on it, that cloth. Mm. This is Bernd Taglach. It's your technique is reverentially hidden from the world by a layer of containment. It's probably the hardest one to describe, but the effect of it, or a one side aspect of it, is that spirit dance is for nobody's entertainment. Mm. It's for nobody's entertainment. If you try to make your spirit dance quote unquote look cool, then you will not be good at spirit dance ever. Mm. You'll be turning it into ordinary dance. You need to hide your spirit dance within the containment. So effectively, think of it maybe like an event horizon on a black hole, yeah? Mm. The stuff, the energy changes that are going on are almost entirely contained within the dance, within the weave. They're not being beamed out to the world. Does that make some kind of sense?
It does.
Because as soon as you get into higher levels of shamanism and you want the world to come into you, into the vessel you've created, if you're beaming stuff out, as you see in some of these sort of qigong, these fake qigong guys where they light candles with their powerful kongjing and stuff, you know?
Yes, the match they've got
that's
hidden the fingers.
That's exact bleeding opposite. That's the exact opposite of what you want to be doing. Yeah. Absolutely opposite. Nothing's going out. It's all contained, but it's not sort of sucked in or held in physically. It's just like you're laying a cloth over the weave, that we're laying a cloth over the guluch. And it's a reverential cloth. It's not trying to stop you from going out to the world. It's not that kind of a cloth. Think of a permeable cloth. The world is going to come in there. This is the later levels as we move towards the journey. The world is going to come in there. It ain't going to prevent that. But what it is you're weave your internal guruk, your internal chalisti, your ayug, is not extending outwards. Yeah. Mm. And you see this on fake shamanism the world over. They say, oh, reach up to the sky and extend your spirit up into the clouds and stuff like this. And your stuff like that. Yeah, that's the exact opposite of what a shaman does. Exact opposite. Mm. Yeah, the clouds come to you, not the other way around. Yeah. And so they were the five that I wanted to pick out. So just to review, so think of them as, if you've got huk aruk, your bag of shamanic techniques, which we've talked about a bunch of them, then once you start to get the hang of some of those techniques, even just moving around the grove with your hands in the tirup position, you can start it just from doing that. If you get into a good state of chalicity with that, if you've got your AMSCA going, if you've got your lightweight observation of self going, then you can definitely, that's a point where you can definitely start, even with that simple thing, just moving around your grove in the tirup position. Mm. But do make sure that you are moving, though. You don't want to practice any of this stuff static. Then you can start working on these five, which are, to review, Ashgui, that heaviness, the flesh hanging on the bones, Numbluk, the energy is contained in your skeletal structure, your ligaments, your tendons, your bones, your body.
Building up the energy potential.
Is contained, is contained in exactly the same way the energy is contained in a strong bow. Not in a different way, it's the same way.
Is it correct to think in terms of you're building up a potential with this as it...
No, that happens. You don't do it. Yeah,
it happens. Yeah.
So all we're doing here is making sure that the storage mechanism, if you like, is in place. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where that building of extra energy that comes out of the weave. Yeah. That comes out of the guruk. Mm. Yeah. And incidentally, on this podcast, I've been using the words guruk and guruk. I've only just sort of woken up after capturing 30 minutes sleep before doing this. I don't know if I have used them the wrong way around. Just watch out for that. Make sure I've said guruk and guruk the right way around in this podcast at various points. Mm. Of course, guruk being the weave, yeah? That's the thing that builds. Guruk being that, guruk being the part of shamanism that you gradually take into you and becomes part of you. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to do anything about it. It's just there all the time. And these things are mostly about building guruk. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they do have implications for guruk as well. Yeah. Good. And so we've got Ashgui, which is the heaviness. You've got Numbluk, which is storing energy like a bow. You've got Borki, which is this thing about the bangles, about containing the movement of bangles, containing the weave, if you like. Muruch, you know, that it's not the skill of containing bangles. It's if you've got that skill, then your chalisti, your physical chalisti is on. It's rather the other way around. It's like a test of your physical chalisti.
Yeah.
And then got Muruch, which is this idea of being covered by a heavy covering, you know, like just... Have a look at some Mongol shamans' garments as they're dancing around. You'll see what I'm talking about. That stuff's not light, right? Mm. Bentaglich, which is this idea of containing the weave, containing your own physical chalicity, containing your own energy within your ayug, such that you remain vessel-like, that you remain cup-like, you remain, you know, we said one time, I think we said, you know, Galahad achieved the grail by becoming the grail. You're becoming a grail, being a cup, right?
Yeah.
You're becoming a cup. And there's a tendency with spirit dances that you don't become a cup. You start beaming stuff or thinking you are, beaming stuff all over the place. Actually, you're not, you just think you are. But that's bad for your physical chalicity, for your ayug. And
basically, don't have a shred of trying to look cool. Just do.
Yes, we've said this before. If you're a shaman, you definitely don't have to worry about what other people think of you. They see you doing their spirit dance, they think, there's a weird guy in the park, right? That's, oh no, let's keep away from him. Yeah, that's a, or her. Yeah, you have to get yourself to a place where you don't care about stuff like that. But of course, if you're doing this stuff properly, if you know, we said the best place to practice this is by yourself in your own grove, somewhere off in nature, then nobody watching. Yeah, there's nobody there. So it hardly matters anyway, does it? You know. But my point is really, if you ever feel that you're trying to modify your spirit dance to, in at any level, to make it look aesthetically pleasing,
stop.
Then stop yourself. Stop yourself. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's not what it's about. Yeah, yeah. And so so they were basically the five techniques, the five flavors. One way to call them, these all come out of Bat. They're all five flavors of Burgschicht Harte, which we've talked about on those podcasts that Joe referred to earlier, and apply them to your spirit dance. Through all of this stuff. Yeah, we'll go through all this stuff again. And just to recap what we said earlier on is that I don't want to conflate the idea of the threefold nature of Chalisti, which is Bat, Toshiltin, and Gukuk. That is really important in terms of the threefold nature of Chalisti. These Tongluk, Ayug, and Yathlakhwi, this way of looking at splitting Chalisti up is not like that. This is levels of a deeper understanding in terms of your mind, your body, and your spirit. Mm. These are things that don't, you know, Bat, Toshiltin, and Gukuk are super real things, right? If you've got Chalisti on, they're there. They're real things that are there. Tongluk, Ayug, and Yathlakhwi, they're more like places where you take your attention while you're learning. They're not actually real. The whole thing's one thing. It's not three things in that respect. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if you want to memorize three words that are Mongol, go Bat, Toshiltin, and Gukuk. Don't go Tongluk, Ayug, and Yathlakhwi. That's probably that. Or if you want to learn all six, then great. Well done.
say those again. Say the last three again.
These are the levels of where a shaman's Burgschicht Harte goes at different times during their training. Yeah.
Yeah.
They are Tongluk, which is kind of the mind level. When we talk about Chalisti to date on the podcast, that's pretty much what we've been talking about, Tongluk all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's your not thinking, yeah?
Yeah.
Ayug, which is what we've talked about on this podcast.
Which are the five techniques of Ayug. Got you.
Well, not the five, there are more,
yeah.
But the five examples of techniques of Ayug, that's your physical Chalisti. And then Yathlakhwi is, we'll get onto later, much later. That's the spirit level of Chalisti, which has to do with this thing we have talked about before, this undifferentiatedness, that the shaman wants to become a tea bag in the ocean. I think we talked about that one time, rather than a message in a bottle kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we'll get onto that in later podcasts. Yeah, but right at the moment, it's really the idea of Ayug that I wanted to get across, which is quite important in spirit dance. You can't start working on Ayug until you can actually do a bit of spirit dance, but we have done a fair few episodes now on spirit dance.
Which again, to reiterate, it does go, this podcast is definitely a course kind of theme rather than just listen to any episode you want. I mean, we do have random episodes, but really for this podcast we want to be going right from the beginning, because otherwise we end up spending half the episode talking about things we've already talked about just to sort of put them in the context of what we're talking about, and we end up wasting half the episode. So
exactly. So I think given the fact that I'm on my last legs, I think that's enough for this one, and hopefully it's got the idea over. And it is something important. It's something you need to work on when you get into the sort of third level.
I don't know about others who have listened to the episode, but the one that poked out to me was the bangles. The bangle.
Yeah,
one.
I just
instantly clicked. I went, oh, I know exactly what you mean there. So
Well, what you'll probably find is some of these things are not as difficult as you think they're going to be. Askwe doesn't take that long to start to get right, especially if you've got somebody to copy. Mm. Or, you know, there is, like I say, on Patreon, there is a video of me doing a bit of that. Numluk does take quite a while. Borki, but these are things you can work on forever. You can never stop working on them, really. Borki is the whole bangle thing, Borki. You get that. I imagine, actually, you know, I'm just thinking back, me practicing that without bangles, I'd have probably been better doing it with bangles. Moruch, once you get it, you get it. I mean, one of the ways you can get Moruch really quickly is to get yourself one of those big sort of, I don't know what you call it, marquee tent, yeah? Big, heavy canvas marquee tent. Get the poles all out of it, get inside and start doing your spirit dance underneath it with it sort of over your head and shoulders, and you'll get the idea of Moruch pretty quick. And then that Bernd Taglach, that's a few things in that. One is, don't feel like you're reaching out or extending out to the world. And also, you know, don't worry about the, you know, how aesthetic your dance is. Spirit dance is not aesthetic, really. I mean, it can look nice, but it doesn't have to. And that's sort of a side issue, really, you know. And you definitely don't, the one thing you definitely don't want to be practicing for your Ayug is isolating particular parts of your body and doing cool movements with them. It is amazing, that stuff. I have done some ordinary dance. I have a good friend who's amazing at dances like reggaeton and stuff like that. Oh, it looks phenomenal, man, but it ain't spirit dance.
All right, well, on that note, thank you ever so much for listening, guys. You can head to the website wovenenergy.com/start-here for your introductory lesson. Sign up to our email list as well. I mean, I haven't sent an email out for a long time, but I will get back on that, especially if you start doing seminars, Damon. That'll be a good good way to keep in touch.
Yeah.
You can go to patreon.com/wovenenergy if you would like to support us over there and get some extra cool stuff. And we will see you in the next episode. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.